Welcome to Sacred Screens. This is where myself, Jordan, and my friend Mike talk about the movies, the Oscar nominees for Best Picture. But in this episode, we're going to talk about how we fell in love with movies in the first place, and then we're going to talk about The Irishman. Please enjoy. So welcome. I have my friend Mike here with me, and we're going to talk about movies. We're going to talk about the Oscars and the Best Picture nominations. But first, we want to talk about how we came about loving movies and how that has matured over the years. And Mike and I met in college, and we first bonded over our love for movies, and not just movies, but cinema, right?
yes.
And we can explain that later. But Mike, why don't you start and just kind of talk about what's your history with movies? Why do you love them so much? Why do you follow the Oscars?
Yeah, thanks, Jordan. Thanks so much for having me on. Really excited just to go through some movies with you. I really first started loving movies, started loving film when I was in high school, took a movie class. Which I thought was just going to be an easy credit, which it was. But it really just kind of started to open up the ways that the art form actually works and the way that the different things that you can do with film, with cinema, that you can't do with any other art form. Just being able to reach the masses with a message or with a certain story and being able to tell a story in multiple ways and multiple facets, which just really spoke to me. I've really loved movies ever since then. Watch the Oscars every single year, based on our friendship that follow it closely throughout the year just to see what movies people are liking and what movies the critics are liking and what movies people are going to see. And so this year especially, it's just been a really, really fun year because there's just some great movies that have come out this year, especially that are nominated for Best Picture.
Yeah. And we were both RAs at Trinity Christian College. Mm-hmm. And when we were RAs, you have to kind of make these events for your dorms. And every year we put on an Oscar party that nobody showed up to.
They showed up the first year. And then after that, they were like, what is this? We had fun, though.
We had fun, yeah. And then I guess for me, at a young age, I just loved movies. I think part of it was my grandma had a room full of VHS tapes. And she would just buy movies all the time. And she had a checkout system for the whole extended family to check out movies. And but it wasn't till high school, I think senior year, that I really fell in love with. I always ignored the Oscars before then. But I saw The Departed in the theater with my friend.
Yeah, 2006, right?
Yep. Mm-hmm. And we both walked out and were like, that was a good movie.
That was awesome, yeah.
And then that year, I before the Oscars, I had only seen Little Miss Sunshine before. And then that was my first introduction to what it means to watch some of those Oscar-nominated movies. And ever since then, I've watched the Oscars every year, followed it. I think when we met that year, it was There Will Be Blood and No Country for Old Men.
Atonement, Juno. Michael Clayton. That was a good year.
It was, yeah, that's a good movie, but some of those don't really stick into the cultural memory as much. But so that's kind of where my love of movies comes from. And we both took the same class in college with, what was his name? Professor Cinema? No.
No, I can't remember his name, but
no,
it was
cinema was a theology.
Yeah,
professor.
It was the understanding movies, right?
Yeah, and I was just going through my transcript the other day for something, and I saw I got a C+ in that class, and I felt so sad that
you're
I
like
that.
That should have been the easiest A of my life.
But I think I remember that professor being, he was kind of hard on our essays and things like that. But
he wanted us to take film very, very seriously, and for 18-year-olds that was not the easiest thing in the world to
do. And it was he was showing us some really old artsy films. Like it was
a lot
some of them were
films.
brutal. Yeah. So we're going to just kind of, we're going to go through each movie in this series here that's nominated for Best Picture. There are 9 nominations this year. And how that works with the Oscars, I believe it's like a preferential ballot system where people vote on their favorite, and so it has to get a certain percentage to get in. And so there is the ones nominated this year are Ford versus Ferrari, The Irishman, Jojo Rabbit, Joker, Little Women, Marriage Story, 1917, Once Upon a Time in Hollywood, and Parasite. Mm-hmm. So I think we'll, which one do you want to start with?
Well, let's see. We can start with The Irishman.
Want to start with The Irishman?
Yeah.
Frank Sheeran. Am I saying that right?
Yeah, you said it right.
Under the contract, management can only fire a driver on very specific charges. So, you ever show up late?
No.
Do you have any moving violations?
No.
Do you drink on the job?
No.
You ever hit anybody?
On a job?
Yeah.
I don't think so.
All right, then. We don't have nothing to worry about. You know, I don't care whether you did it or not. That makes no difference to me.
Yeah, I know.
I'm here to defend you, right?
Right. What do you want to know? You want to know if I did it or not?
So The Irishman, what we're going to do, we're going to talk about what we liked about it, what it meant to us, what are some of the themes we saw in it. My whole thing, especially as a pastor and watching movies, is that, you know, I believe all truth is God's truth. And so whatever truth comes through the screen and the story, that is part of God's truth. And it teaches us something about our lives and our own stories. So The Irishman is Martin Scorsese's masterpiece. I don't know.
It's one of his many masterpieces. Yes,
I would. The longer I've sat with that movie, the more I realize it's not my favorite Scorsese movie.
Mm-hmm. I think that's fair.
But it is really good. And it tells a story. It's adapted from a book called I Heard You Paint Houses.
I Heard You Paint Houses.
It's, yeah.
About a hitman for the mob.
Yeah. And he claims he was the one who killed Jimmy Hoffa.
Among many other things.
Yes. And so this is a story of his whole life, and he uses de-aging technology for De Niro, Pacino, and Pesci throughout the movie, which sometimes looks good, sometimes it doesn't. You can't really hide how an old man walks, but...
Mm-hmm. There's a scene where Robert De Niro is kicking somebody, and he's supposed to be, I think, in his like 30s or 40s at that time, and it definitely looks like an 80-year-old man... kicking somebody.
Yes.
And like that scene especially sticks out as like, oh, that's definitely an older gentleman doing that.
So just give me your general thoughts on it and what you seem to like about it. We'll kind of go back and forth.
Yeah. So like you, I really, really enjoyed the movie. You know, it is streaming on Netflix, and so it's a long movie.
It's three and a half hours long.
Did you watch it all in one sitting?
Yes.
I did not.
Yes.
Full disclosure, I did not watch it all in one sitting. Some of us have places to be and things to do.
Well, I started falling asleep in the middle of it because it was like 9:30, 10 o'clock.
Oh, yeah.
And Michelle made me stay up. She's like, you wanted to watch this tonight. We're going to finish it. And I was like, oh, I could finish it later.
She's like, I don't want to have to watch it anymore. it's fantastic. You know, it's a big epic movie. You know, it goes... from when Robert De Niro's character is supposedly a young man to when he is much, much older. From a technical standpoint, it's fantastic. The de-aging technology is very, very good. It's a beautifully shot movie. Anytime you have Martin Scorsese doing a movie, the shots are going to be beautiful. The set pieces are going to be beautiful. And the movie is just going to be very, very fast paced, even if it is a long movie.
And the attention to detail is...
Oh, it's unbelievable.
Crazy.
And, you know, that's one of the things I really did like about it is, even though it is long, it's not boring. Mm-hmm. It's not even a little bit boring. You know, there were no parts in the movie where I'm like, They just need to pick things up here. The plot moves along really quickly, and it's a story that I didn't know much about. You know, I'm 30 years old, and I don't know much about Jimmy Hoffa. I don't know much about all of that stuff with unions and the president pardoning him and all of that stuff. But the movie does a really, really good job of not walking you along slowly, of moving it along quickly, but also moving it along in a way that people that don't know the story that well can really follow it.
Yeah.
The acting is just superb in it. And one of the criticisms of Scorsese over the years, especially by people in our line of work and people that we respect, is that he glorifies violence or glorifies crime or, you know, glorifies a lifestyle that is really not something that we want to be glorifying. And this movie, I think more than any other one of his movies, really shows the ultimate emptiness of that lifestyle and the ultimate emptiness of when you go down that life of crime, go down that life of depravity, and what it ultimately leads to.
Loneliness.
Yeah. And at no point did I think to myself, like, oh, these guys have it figured out. These guys are doing something right.
Or you're like, I want to be like them.
Yeah, exactly.
It's like, nobody's good here.
Exactly. So, you know, by the end of the movie, it does something to you. You do feel that emptiness. You do feel that that depravity, not in the sense of like where it like corrupts you in any way, but just where you're like, oh my gosh, like I've been watching these guys go down the wrong path for 3.5 hours now. And yeah, it really, really is effective in that way.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I think it definitely has, to me, one of the things that thinking of the movie months after seeing it, it really sticks out as a story, kind of a cautionary story about what does it mean to live a life that's destructive rather than building up or life-giving. It's kind of like what happens when you don't, instead of loving and helping your neighbor, you destroy them. What is your life going to look like at the end of that? Mm-hmm. And, you know, Scorsese in a lot of his movies is always dealing with this idea of violence and, I'm not thinking of the word, not deception, betrayal.
There it is.
So a lot of his movies has characters that are tight, that are friends, and there's a betrayal at some point, right? Mm-hmm. And Wolf of Wall Street is between, Jordan Belfort and Donnie, who was his secondhand man. He eventually had to turn everybody in. Departed, there's all kinds of betrayal.
That entire movie is just one giant betrayal back and forth.
When he did Last Temptation of Christ, you know, it was Judas and Jesus.
Mm-hmm. Yep, Goodfellas.
Uh-huh, Goodfellas had it. And that's kind of the themes of his movie. And this one has it too. Because Fred and Jimmy Hoffa become good friends. And then Fred ends up getting the call to
spoiler alert.
Well,
I think everybody knows what happens with Jimmy Hoffa. It's one of the most famous missing persons cases of all time.
I'll add that at the beginning that there will be spoilers. I don't care if they're spoil. Like, if you're listening to this, you want to hear it. So,
I mean, absolutely, it deals with that. And what's so fascinating to me is that Robert De Niro's character thinks that he's the good guy throughout the entire movie. And you as the audience know that he is not the good guy throughout the entire movie. And so it's such a, he does such a great job of having you as the audience be in on this. We're like, you and Martin Scorsese and the screenwriter, we're all on the same team here where we can look at this person and see the depravity. But the person himself, Robert De Niro's character, can't see it at all. Mm-hmm. And he can't understand how his, he can't understand the emptiness that he's feeling. He can't understand how his life eventually got to where it was. Mm-hmm. And that's really, really effective in this movie.
Yeah. I think that just in life in general, I think when people are so caught up with themselves, mm-hmm. With sin, with living just for themselves only, they don't know how miserable they are. Mm-hmm. And that's De Niro's character in the movie. He, the whole mm-hmm. time, he doesn't know how miserable he is. I mean, the character, his daughter, Anna Paquin, mm-hmm. plays her. I think she's a character set in there as kind of like the canary in the mine, mm-hmm. of just her silence and refusing to talk to her father, but her silence also tells him she knows what he's doing. Mm-hmm. And so that her character works as kind of, it's hard to say our voice to him, mm-hmm. because she doesn't speak, but, mm-hmm. but just the, she knows what we know also, mm-hmm. right?
Well, and she sees him for who he really is, yeah. and he's constantly surrounded by people who don't see themselves for who they are. Every single character in this movie has a untrue view of themselves, mm-hmm. and has a kind of warped view of themselves. But we as the audience can see them for who they are, and when you have a character on screen that sees everybody else for who they are, it really does, just goes a really long way to not have you buy into this lifestyle, to not have you buy into, this, kind of mafia crime life, mm-hmm. Because if somebody else is in there and she's going, this is not good, this is not right, there's something wrong going on here, we as the audience can all go, yeah, right? Like, I didn't know if I was the only one saying that or the only one thinking that, but right. if she's saying that, I feel like it's true.
Yeah.
Or not saying it with her eyes.
Yeah, yeah.
Because her character has no lines in the movie.
So, those are just kind of the themes of this movie, and I think it's a very deeply human movie. It's Scorsese and all his pals, Pesci, De Niro, mm-hmm. and really struggling with mortality. And aging, mm-hmm. and looking back on life and what they regret and what they celebrate. And so I think it's a powerful movie. It's one that's hard to rewatch because it's 3.5 hours
long. It is. I thought about rewatching it before the podcast, mm-hmm. but
wasn't really enough time.
Didn't have enough time even in the month beforehand right. To do it.
So who do you think the audience is for this movie? I mean, that's another thing, mm-hmm. I really like to connect for people, because there's, as much as we like to say movies are for everyone, I think there are certain movies that the general audience won't connect with as much. So who do you think this movie's for?
I definitely think that, it's a more male audience. Not that women won't enjoy it as well, but mm-hmm. It's about men. It's written by men. It's made by men. I think that it's definitely a more masculine male audience. And I definitely think that it's made for, I guess, middle age or older men who are looking back on their lives, mm-hmm. Who are reflecting on who they are as people, and who maybe aren't quite in the old age yet, maybe are more in the middle age, but are looking at what does it mean to leave a legacy? What does mm-hmm. it mean to grow old with my family?
Yeah. Yeah, and anybody that's interested in just cinema in general, not if you're the person that's like, oh, a new Star Wars movie is out, I should mm-hmm. check it out. Mm-hmm. This probably isn't for you, right? Like the casual moviegoer.
Mm-hmm. I mean, it's a commitment.
Yes, it's a 3.5 hour.
It's a commitment that you can take in bite-sized chunks if you want to. Like I said, Martin Scorsese makes movies that are just wildly entertaining, mm-hmm. And fast paced, and so I don't think you need to be the ultimate cinephile in order to enjoy this movie.
Sure.
But yeah, I definitely think it's more serious moviegoer.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Thank you for joining us for Sacred Screens. Next time we're going to be talking about Once Upon a Time in Hollywood. Sacred Screens is a series from Voices of Hope, which is a podcast of New Hope Presbyterian Church in Castle Rock, Colorado. If you've liked this podcast, please rate and review us and share us with your friends, and we will see you next time.